This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. A significant development of the case against Brian Koberger today, accused of the brutal murders of the four University of Idaho students. Tensions flaring in the courtroom today over the defense's jury survey strategy. The judge expressed concerns about the survey's detailed questions, fearing that they might actually breach the non-dissemination order. Despite the defense arguing that such surveys are standard practice, the survey has been temporarily halted until further discussions. Koberger, of course, facing the death penalty, remains in custody as both sides prepare for the crucial hearing set for April 10th. Let's now take you to the courtroom so you can hear that hearing and those tensions flare in their entirety.
The lawyer or agent knows or reasonably should know will have a substantial likelihood of materially prejudicing or otherwise influencing the outcome of the case. And that's essentially the language out of Idaho Professional Conduct Rule 3.6. But what is particularly important today is the next sentence. Your Honor directed, this order specifically prohibits any out-of-court statement which a reasonable person would expect to be disseminated by means of public communication that relates to the following. And among the items listed are the identity or nature of evidence expected to be presented at trial or any sentencing phase. Any information a lawyer knows or reasonably should know is likely to be inadmissible at trial, and that would, if disclosed, create a substantial risk of prejudicing impartial trial. And it goes further down to say this includes performance or results of examinations or tests. Our concern here is that the questions that are being propounded on behalf of the defense, and let me stop for just a moment, because I want to be clear on this. We met with Ms. Taylor Thursday before the Friday when we filed our motion, yes.
Yes.
And we raised our concerns with Ms. Taylor. She confirmed for us that the survey was being conducted on behalf of the defense. And we raised with her the concerns we had about the specific language of the questions that were being asked. And Ms. Taylor represented to us, and I do not dispute this, that's why I want to make this part of the record, that she had not seen the actual questions themselves, that she had approved the topics that could be looked into during the survey. So I want to put that in the record that we are not accusing Ms. Taylor of drafting these questions verbatim and then say, go send these out to the public. We are concerned, though, that the people hired by the defense to conduct this survey did exactly that. And the examples of the things that are of concern can be found in the transcript of one of the calls. As Your Honor will recall, we had a person come to us who had received one of these calls and actually recorded the call. And so our office prepared a transcript, and that was attached as Exhibit B, I believe, to our motion for order prohibiting contact. In addition to generic questions about the criminal justice system, here's where we get to things that concern the state immensely. Question: have you read, seen, or heard if Brian Koberger was arrested at his parents' home in Pennsylvania? Question: have you read, seen, or heard if police found a knife sheath on the bed next to one of the victims? Question: have you read, seen, or heard that DNA found on the knife sheath was later matched to Brian Koberger? Question: have you read, seen, or heard if Brian Koberger owned the same type of car recorded on video driving in the neighborhood where the killings occurred? Have you read, seen, or heard if the cell phone tower data showed that Brian Koberger made several trips near the victim's home in the month before the killing? Have you read, seen, or heard if the university students in Moscow and their parents lived in fear until Brian Koberger was arrested for the murders? Have you read, seen, or heard if Brian Koberger said that he was out driving alone on the night of the murders? Have you read, seen, or heard if Brian Koberger stalked one of the victims? Have you read, seen, or heard if Brian Koberger had followed one of the victims on social media? Your Honor, there is absolutely no question but that those questions are disseminating by means of communication evidence expected to be presented, evidence that could be or would be inadmissible at trial. And I will say there are a number of these representations placed in the form of a question, but representations of fact that are not true or that would not be offered at trial. Or the performance of results of contamination tests. And these questions specifically refer to DNA testing. Now, I recognize that the defense says, well, all of this information is out there in the public media somewhere. But that misses the point. That's assuming that every person in Latah County who is called has followed all of this nonsense in social media, has followed extensive coverage. There are people who consciously avoid reading coverage or listening to coverage about this case because they don't want to. That's the fallacy of the position defense is taking here. So what the agents of the defense have done is they have gone out and interrogated 400 citizens of Latah County and embedded in them facts specific to this case, some of which are not even true, some of which would not be admissible in court. And those people, whether they had heard that information before or not, are now saturated with that information. That is exactly what the non-dissemination order was intended to prohibit. That is reckless conduct, and it's outrageous. They can ask a survey, and they can ask people, what do you know about the Brian Koberger case? What have you heard about the Brian Koberger case? What do you think about the Brian Koberger case? Do you have an opinion as to whether he's guilty or not guilty? Why do you think that? They can ask all those questions, legitimate survey questions, if you want to do a legitimate survey of public sentiment. But these questions go far beyond that. And I recognize that it is represented that the survey questioning here in Latah County with those 400 residents has been completed. But they're already saying they want to take these questions out to other possible veneers, doing the same thing in other potential jury pools that they're doing with our own. That is far beyond acceptable. These are questions that, quite frankly, might not be able to ask in voir dire, much less into an uncontrolled, unsupervised environment without any bounds, and just recklessly feeding this information, which is sensitive. And it's particularly sensitive when it comes to information that the state does not believe is true, or the state does not believe would be admissible or would be offered at trial. On the issue of whether information already publicly available isn't included in Your Honor's order, which it clearly is because it doesn't say otherwise, we know that there is no exception in the court's order saying if the information is already publicly known, it's okay to disseminate it again. And indeed, that would be reckless for the very reasons that I just articulated, Judge. We would then be feeding information that is potentially prejudicial or that could affect the open-mindedness of prospective jurors to people who may not have heard it before. That's completely reckless. And so, Your Honor, based on that, we think this needs to come to a stop. We think if the defense wants to continue doing survey work, which they are welcome to do, given what we've seen here, that the questions need to be approved by the court before they go out. And the question certainly should not include the types of questions, fact-specific questions, that have been delivered to 400 citizens of Latah County. That's where we're standing right now, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you. So then how can we compare unless you use the same questions? That's the problem. I mean, the damage has been done.
Well, that's one argument to make, but we don't want to perpetuate the damage that was done. And if they want to do a comparison, then they could have another survey in Latah County and do a responsible survey questionnaire instead of one tainting this people. And frankly, they should ensure that they don't go to the same phone numbers that they preloaded with this other factual information when they make their legitimate survey inquiries. The defense's people brought this on themselves. It's not the state's fault. Nobody had control over this other than the folks working for the defense. They made their bed. They got to live with it. I mean, frankly, if we were in the commercial context, we would say, not only will you do this over and do it correctly, but we will not pay you for the work you did that was so outrageously wrong. That's not the context right here. I don't care about that. What I care about is making sure that more people aren't tainted. And I would suspect, Judge, as we move forward in this case, that the state will be asking the defense, and if they aren't willing to provide it, asking the court to order the defense to provide the identity of every person that was contacted in those surveys. So when we get to voir dire, we can identify people who have been contacted, I guess is the best word to describe, and faced with these questions. And so we can incorporate that into the questions during voir dire to see just how much impact, if any, it had on each one of those particular jurors. I don't know how else to deal with this. I realize I
disqualified 40 people.
Well, we 400.
400, that's what I meant. Sorry. Yeah, 400.
And we can do that. You know, Latah County has, what, almost 40,000 residents, although not all of those are going to be part of the jury panels, prospective jury panels, but 400 may be a reasonably small number. And yes, I think that certainly would be a viable solution, is just identify those people. We can certainly identify them by telephone number, it was called, and just not include them on the list.
Since you're standing up, you want to talk about due process?
Actually, Mr. Nye is the one prepared to talk about due process, and that's why he's on. He's available by Zoom. If you'd like to have that now, that would be good.
I'll come back to that.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'm concerned about that, Ms. Taylor. So go ahead. Your turn.
Your Honor, we have Brian Edelman ready to testify by Zoom about these surveys, if the court would hear his testimony.
First, I want to hear about the process. I care more about how this came down than what he did, although I just learned for the first time that you had nothing to do with the questions.
I didn't write the questions, Judge. Those questions are generated by Brian Edelman, and he can tell you who he is and his educational background and why the questions are crafted as they're crafted. But I approved him doing this survey. This is not an anomaly. These kinds of surveys are done in high-profile cases quite often. I don't know how I could present to the court what's going to be required at the venue change hearing without understanding what is going on with the public. This is an anonymous survey. This is not one where anybody's identified as far as the defense wants to know this or the prosecutor wants to know this. It's a random survey, and there's a reason why there are general questions and more specific questions. And Mr. Edelman can explain that, but I'll do my best to paraphrase that.
Okay, well, I'm just curious. Did Mr. Edelman, was he aware of the dissemination order?
I don't know if he was aware of that or not, but we gave him no information in the case, Your Honor. He received nothing from us as far as no police reports, no contact with our client, no interviews. He received no information. His entire construct of this survey is as he does in his high-profile cases. He pulled the media local to this area to see what the most common stories were. Those are things that are in the public arena. This court and counsel knows how much coverage this case has received. And he does what he does by looking only at what's in the public. We didn't provide him any police reports. We didn't pull.
I'm sorry. It's just that does miss the point. I mean, it's kind of ironic that we have worked so hard, including you, okay, both sides, to protect a fair trial, okay? And our concern from the very beginning was all the media stuff floating around, okay, that affects your client, Mr. Koberger, to get a fair trial. And some of these questions actually create a concern about, well, that they're inculpatory. It could be prejudice for his client, okay? And that I'm just surprised that both of you didn't come together and say, you know, there are certain things that we probably shouldn't put into the public on a telephone call. It really concerns me, and that's why I did what I did that Friday. Now I'm being accused of violating a due process, which is a whole big issue for me.
I can understand that would not be taken. I have to represent my client to the best of my ability. And the reason for that, Your Honor, with all due respect, I was shocked to see the court issue an order within hours of the state filing a motion late on a Friday without giving us a chance to be heard. And that's going to delve into our argument on due process. But since it came up and since that feels like the elephant in the room right now, I think maybe we should just go ahead and address that.
Sure.
And that was my motion. And I asked you to set aside the order that you made without having a chance to hear from us, making a decision that now you're locked into. And it was a one-sided
decision.
I'm not
locked into anything. My order didn't say it was permanent. It told you that I was going to have a hearing.
Maybe I phrased that very poorly. It's a decision that you already made.
Okay, let's go back. I got the motion at 4:30 on Friday. Now, it doesn't even reflect, you know, just when it was filed, because Odyssey has a delay, right? So I get the motion at 4:30 Friday. I get a response from you at 4:45 Friday, right?
I don't know what time you received it, but I filed an objection the minute I could.
Because then you know that about 5:00, that's when I issued that. So I had a half an hour. I read the materials that were attached to the motion that the state filed, and I had very little information. But it seemed like there were some real legitimate concerns about the survey. And obviously, it turns out there are concerns, legitimate concerns about what was done in the survey. So in my order, I told you that I was going to set a hearing. So I don't know what your understanding is with just the process. Okay, but on Friday, sent this hearing. So what are we doing today? Okay, I'm hearing you out. You had notice. I mean, really, that's what we're talking about. That's what the law. What is your understanding of due process?
My understanding is that I should have notice and an opportunity to be heard.
And you did that.
I'm having that now, but there has been a decision made by this court almost 2 weeks ago that stopped us from completing our work. I understand that Mr. Thompson raised a concern, and his last paragraph to the court in his motion was, it seems that it may have violated the non-dissemination order. And so we're stopped from completing our comparative surveys right there when we're up against the deadline to get to our motion to change a venue. I'm looking at, it stops me from doing the work and meeting the deadlines to argue for Brian to be in a place where he can have a fair trial. I think the court should not have issued an order stopping us, but set a hearing, shorten time, set it for Monday morning. If the court wanted to set a hearing for that Monday morning, we wouldn't have lost 2 weeks worth of work if the court chooses to let us complete the work.
But that could have been more damage. I mean, you know, this less than 2 weeks really has very, very little impact, okay, on your work.
It does have an impact, Your Honor.
You don't even have a trial set.
We have our motion to change venue. We don't have trial. You're right. We don't have trial. My understanding was that we were going to hear the venue change and the court was going to make a decision and then set trial so that we didn't send out a bunch of subpoenas and reserve this courtroom unless we're going to stay here. That was my understanding. My problem, what sets me back, is getting my work complete to get my briefing to the state in the time at the deadline that I was already given and meeting that hearing date that's set for venue change. And from there, everything else flows. When are we going to set trial?
Well, we wouldn't even be here, okay, if there was some communication between you and the state about the survey.
There are things I can communicate with the state about, and there are things that I cannot communicate with the state about. How I'm preparing my case is not one of those things. It's just not one of those things. I go and see Bill and Ashley. I go to their office every week. Oftentimes we talk. We email each other. We talk to each other. But I don't need their permission every step of the way to prepare my case. Doing these surveys is not an anomaly. This is something that's done in these high-profile cases.
Well, apparently, Mr. Alden did not even see the non-dissemination order, and you apparently did not give that to him. So this is a very not a usual case, number one. And you know that we've been working very, very hard to keep the sort of noise out of the case. And now it's been injected at least to these 400 people. Without a permission of the court, without discussion with the state, I mean, that's troublesome. And then when I'm being accused, directly accused, okay, by you in your brief, that I violated his due process rights. Now, that's not what the law says, and that's not what the facts are. And you even cited cases that say exactly what due process is in the law, right?
I understand that, and I agree that's what due process is. My issue is that the order was signed, stopping our work without a chance to be heard. It's as if the state and the court had decided we violated the non-dissemination order, and we didn't.
I was doing was stalling it, okay, for less than 2 weeks so we could have this hearing, number one. Now, if you feel like you've been prejudiced or your client has been prejudiced for less than 2 weeks, okay, in this work, I'll push it out. I'll just push out the trial. I mean, not the trial, but the hearing. I mean, is that satisfactory?
Your Honor, I think that might be what we need. I need to figure out if we're going to be able to continue the surveys. But if we are, I expect that we will need some additional time to get them done so that I can get the work to the state to review.
Okay, well, that's a different issue. I've never said, no, you can't do a survey. This was a total shock to me that Friday. At 4:30.
I can understand that. It was a shock to the state.
I had to stall it out, okay? Because so that we could all talk about it and figure out what is the right path, okay? Because this is a big deal, and I take it very, very seriously. And I was surprised, okay, that this was happening behind our backs, my backs, okay?
The, the, I... I understand that this probably is the first time this court has run into it. I know it was the first time that Mr. Thompson has run into it. I haven't used the survey in my own cases because I haven't had a case like Brian's case before. This is an extremely high profile case. I've been involved in a lot of capital cases, and I understand the standard of care in capital cases. I also know that this very kind of survey was used about 7 years ago in Kootenai County in another high profile case. I wasn't on the case, but I'm aware of it. I'm aware that this very survey has been used in other jurisdictions, other counties in Idaho and other states in really high profile cases. So I understand that it was a surprise to Mr. Thompson. He told me it was. And I'm hearing the court say that's a surprise as well.
How it was done. I'm not concerned. I figured there was going to be a survey at some point. There would have to be. It was the way it was done, okay, and the questions that were asked. That is the real problem, as Mr. Thompson pointed out.
So the way it was done, I know in the other Kootenai County case, permission to do the survey wasn't sought of the state, the prosecutor, or the judge. I can comment on that one. I know about that. I don't know about the other cases. So that takes us to why did we ask the questions we asked? I don't think it's common to get permission from the state to do our work. I think that it's a surprise because it's the first time that's happened, at least when this court's been on the bench and in Mr. Thompson's tenure here. So I understand that. When I met with Bill and Ashley in their office on the 21st, I asked them not to give you the police reports that they had in the transcript without me having a chance to be heard, because I didn't want an order without us being able to talk to the court. I asked if we could maybe set up an on-the-record meeting with the court to talk about this. And that wasn't what was done. It was Friday when this went out.
Sure. I mean, I would have been available on Friday to talk about it if that was necessary.
I would have gladly sat down. I didn't offer that next Friday. I would have come to town for it. I offered the following Thursday and Friday, knowing that I had a lot of availability both of those days. I would have come to town. I would have gladly sat down. By this point, the prosecutor knows I'm not telling him my preparation in the case, and I could have explained it. The thing I didn't want to happen is exactly what did happen. All of a sudden, there's an accusation against us and there's an order signed stopping us. I appreciate the court being willing to just push everything out 2 weeks. I think that's helpful. And I mean, if that's what the court's willing to do, that's fine. But the problem is we are stopped and then we have to respond to this. And if you think about the non-dissemination order, for sure, we wanted that non-dissemination order. We're the ones that asked for it. We're the ones that argued for it. We also know that our non-dissemination order mimics Idaho Rule of Professional Conduct 3.6. And when you look at that and the comments of that, I think it's helpful. There are things that we can say publicly, but we choose not to. We don't, our team doesn't even so much as answer no comment to emails, to calls, to people trying to talk to us, because we just don't want to do that. It's easier to say nothing. So the construct of this survey is to ask these general questions. And then you ask specific ones because you get different answers when you ask those. It is not injecting information. They are, have you read, seen, or heard? And remember, these are anonymous and these are random. So they're not planned. Nobody's planned to be contacted. I don't know the names. I'm sure I can get the phone numbers if that's what the court wants. But I don't know who the people are. Nobody's identified as the person they're being called on behalf of. Even when pressed by Detective Payne, the people conducting the survey didn't know. If we go back to the non-dissemination order, which mirrors Rule 3.6, that's to prevent lawyers involved in a case from making statements that will be widely disseminated, right? To talk to the press. And the purpose of that is because I read the police reports. I would have a little more credibility than anybody else on the street saying something about the case. Same with Bill. That's the purpose of it, so that we don't say things to the press on Dateline, on 48 Hours, because we've actually read police reports, we've interviewed people, and we're doing the work on the case. So when you have an anonymous survey that doesn't identify, the person conducting the survey didn't know who was behind it as far as which party to the case. They can't answer that. So all of a sudden, they're questioning about what you've seen in the media doesn't come from a particular party in the case. And the purpose of it is to ferret out what if people have exposure to the case. If you look at State's Attachment B, you can see on page 2 that there's questions, and I'm at lines 10 through 12, about what they know about the case from the media. This is all, again, looking at our non-dissemination order and looking at the rule, things that are in the public record, right? That everything is public in this case unless we specifically seal it. So this person says they don't know much. And then if you go to page 4, there are several things they do know. And that's the purpose of it. When somebody's given a broad question, tell me what you know about this. They're like, I don't know. I don't really know what you want, so I'm not going to say anything. And they don't give you an answer. But when you say, have you read, seen, or heard X? Well, yeah. And then it's the next question. And if the answer's no, I don't, it's next question. Nobody's saying, well, it was in the newspaper on 15 occasions. And this is particularly borne out when you think about the things, and the state said it, some of these things are things that are just not true. That's what the Haddon case tells me I have to show you. It's not enough that there's just a lot of media coverage, and it's a lot more harmful if it's media coverage about things that aren't true. So it's nobody's injecting anything into the case. A random small percentage of the population is contacted. Have you read, seen, or heard things that are lifted straight out of the media? And if the answer is yes, you move on. If the answer is no, you move on. That's what the survey was about. And you can see why looking at pages 2 and 4 of State's Exhibit B. And I think that we should also think about what the words in the non-dissemination order mean. When you say we disseminated information, that means to make widely available. This is a one-on-one conversation with no party identified. This isn't making it widely available. When you talk about disseminating information, the definition of that is to put it out there by public means, radio, TV, social media. And that's not what was happening either. These were questions. And they were things lifted 100% from the media, 100% already in the public record. And it is a one-by-one conversation. This isn't something that's being put out there through social.
It kind of is.
Well, now it is, but I certainly didn't expect this.
400 people, okay? It's planting some seeds where then people are encouraged, or they say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. I'm going to look more into this. I mean, we were trying to keep the false information that was out there in media land, that it wasn't going to affect your client.
I agree. This is less than 1% of the population. It's one-on-one. It's not by means of public communication. To think about alleging that we violated the non-dissemination order is basically alleging that we violated our ethical rules as well. And there's parts to it.
I'm not accusing you of that, especially now that I know that you didn't.
I didn't write the question, but I knew what was going to happen. I take responsibility for the choices on the case, Judge, but I just don't think this is a violation of the ethical rules or non-dissemination order. These are questions about things already in the public record. That's in our order. That's in the rule.
Let me ask you this. I mean, really, getting hit by this, I'm late on Friday afternoon. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure what a judge should do in a situation like that, but I just say, yeah, no, keep going until we can have a hearing in 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks. Or do you just pause it down so that everybody can talk about it and figure out if there is an issue? That's how I looked at it from where I was sitting and what the information that was provided to me. And you did respond it, but you said you were going to submit a brief and affidavit. That's great. But it was 5 o'clock on Friday.
I know.
So,
and I mean, I can't tell you how frustrating that was for me. I'd had this conversation with the prosecutor the day before. I'd offered to come and talk to the court and let the court look at all this. I knew full well if they did exactly what they did, the court would sign an order before I had a chance to say, hey, wait a minute. Let's really look at all of the words in the non-dissemination order. Let me tell you why we did this. I knew exactly what would happen. I don't want to say that there's like that you should do something different. I want to be heard on these things. I don't want the court to, on a Friday night, get a flurry of things that I can't respond to and ask you to think about the bigger context. We're lawyers. Words mean something.
Well, did also, you think I wasn't going to give you an opportunity to be heard?
No, your order said I could be heard later, but there was a decision that was made then. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around the court taking this as an emergency motion when the words in the state's motion telling you put a stop to it are, it seems like they might have violated this. That is a weak accusation for the court to take an emergency order position on. But I know why the court did. The court has all of this and no context for it. And it's a Friday night. And I mean, if you'd received this on Thursday, my guess is you would have said, we're having a hearing Friday morning. I don't care if it's by Zoom.
Right. I told you all, both sides, you know, if you need to have a quick hearing, let me know. We can do it on Zoom. I mean, I want to move this thing along.
I would have been available.
Spending all this energy, okay,
yeah,
about this issue.
I lost a weekend of what I planned to respond to this. I thought we would probably be dealing with it in chambers on the record meeting on the Thursday or Friday until I got the motion.
Yeah, I have about 7 briefs here now.
Well, you can see we lost a lot of time.
I'm not complaining about it because I'm learning a lot.
The last thing I'm going to say on this, Judge, is that non-dissemination order contemplates that you make this statement that you reasonably know is going to go out and harm the trial. This survey was never intended to do anything but identify issues within this county to support or defeat our argument for venue change. When you hear from Brian Edelman, which I don't know if you have to now because I've said most of the things.
I'm happy to hear what he has to say if you want him to be said to me.
You would know, and you probably know from his affidavit, sometimes he recommends against venue change.
Sure.
Because it's not there. He's done with Latah County. The results aren't compiled yet. I anticipate he'll recommend we change venue. Where we are now is we'd like to finish the other two counties. You don't have to do two.
You did say that he said that Latah County is biased.
I anticipate he's going to recommend we change venue for that reason.
I'm interested from him how he defines bias.
Yeah.
We all have some biases.
I will not put words in his mouth for that one.
I'm not expecting you to do that.
I will either have him testify today if you want to hear it today, or we'll do it at the venue change hearing when we get there. The question, I understand the court's willing to set our deadlines out 2 more weeks for venue issues. The question remains then, what do I need to show you? What do I need to present to you so that we can do a survey, a comparative survey? The target is two additional counties, and I really hate that I'm in here telling you all what we need to do, but here we are. So what we need to do is survey two additional counties. And I mean, we don't have to. We can come in with what we have. But generally, I think courts ask, where could we go? And I think that's a fair question here, because we do know the media coverage has been extensive. And so I think it's fair to understand if there's a difference. If there's not, then you're left in court.
Are you going to tell me what counties?
I mean, I can. Do you want me to publicly disseminate that? Because this is the very definition of public dissemination.
I don't know if that should be done, or it seems like it could have some, whether or not there's some credibility of that survey, depending on what county you are looking at. We, you know, we have very different counties and different thinking throughout this state. So I don't know what Mr. Edelman has in mind, or what you have in mind.
I can tell you, Your Honor, his recommendation is that we do one of the counties in Southeast Idaho, because it's a different news feed and it's not on the front page of the paper every day. So we will do a Southeastern Idaho county. That would either be Bannock or Bonneville, and I think Bonneville is slightly bigger than Bannock. The other county is Ada, and the reason for Ada is because it has a very large courthouse with a lot of good security, and that court system has handled high-profile cases in a way that's safe for everybody. The population's very large there, so even if we had to draw off a lot of jurors, would have the population there to do it. Additionally, Ada County makes sense when you look at the Rule 21B, the convenience because of the airport and the number of out-of-town people that will be coming in, and the ability to have hotels and restaurants where there would be people wouldn't be running to other people necessarily. So Ada makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons to me, those reasons, the courthouse security and places to stay among them. But Dr. Edelman has told us that because of the news feed, that we really need to do a Southeastern Idaho. And so the decision was to do both. And in my mind, that is because it makes sense to know. If we're going to go to the time to understand this and really give the court a picture, the court might want to know those two questions.
Thank you.
Sure. I don't think I have anything left to say right now.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Thompson or Mr. Nye?
I'm not sure that the due process issue is something that's at issue right now.
I think I've already made it this decision. I mean, based on the facts and the law, I mean,
There's no due process violation here.
No.
There is nothing wrong. In fact, law contemplates the court can take emergency action to stop something and call a timeout until it affords everybody the opportunity to have their say, and the court can make the final decision. That is all Your Honor did here. And I would suggest, Judge, that it would not be prudent or proper for Your Honor to change or limit your own authority on that. I think that you have to continue to reserve to yourself the ability to act quickly, to cause a timeout if you are alarmed sufficiently to justify that, and to give the parties an opportunity to appear before you and sort it out.
I'm not going to change that. That's good. For sure, because the law allows me to do that.
Yes, sir.
And I know what due process means.
And I say that only in light of an email that your staff attorney sent to us the other day ago that suggested that maybe the court was not going to be entering orders without full hearings with everybody.
Oh, well, but Ms. Taylor wanted, she said, from here on out, we're going to talk about that too. Because now I understand, because I haven't seen it yet, because I didn't have the computer, that you are stipulating to sealing all of the discovery stuff. And I just stopped. Okay, in terms of signing on those orders that you're sending me, because I don't want to be accused of doing the wrong thing. And there's another situation that you brought up, Ms. Taylor, about that there was a prior thing where I had done that about the IPV.
Yeah.
And the state asked to do a public order just to say that we provided the IDG or some of the IDG to you. And that doesn't really say anything except that. But you were criticizing me for that, too.
Your Honor, to be clear, it's not the content of that order. My concern is the process. My concern is it feels like from our perspective that Mr. Thompson says, hey, Judge, can you do this? And I'm getting ready to weigh in and it gets done.
I didn't get a response from you.
Your Honor, that was out the same day. I was in the process of writing, and this was by letter, it wasn't by motion. I was in the process of writing a letter to the court asking to be heard on some issues, and the order was signed, or the new order was generated. The content of it isn't the problem. It's the concern about the process, the concern about making sure we have a clear record of what's done, and the concern about things halting what we're doing before we can be heard. And okay,
did you want that to be not sealed? The other part, all the IGD stuff, that's like six pages, seven pages?
No, Your Honor, I don't have a problem with what the court ended up doing. I was concerned about the process. And then having this order issue on a Friday without having an opportunity to talk about it, my alarm bells go off. And I think this can't happen. I probably have the court's attention squarely on me in this issue, which I anticipated. But what I didn't want to have is I don't want to have the prosecutor writing the court letters and the court doing something and me running around trying to catch up. I mean, the thing that happened is fine, but then we have this other thing that happened and I don't want this habit.
I understand.
I'm sorry.
The survey.
The order to stop. Yeah. Sure. So it's that there are two things that have happened without me being able to even weigh in that's done when the prosecutor asks you to do something. And I don't like that. I want to have opportunities to be heard. I certainly understand a court's emergency power, but if this was an emergency, the state knew from March 8th about these surveys, the state sat down and talked to me and I offered to see you with the state. And then their motion said, it seems like it might be a violation. So I think maybe we need to define emergency a little bit better, because I know you have those powers and I wouldn't ask you to not use the powers that you have. I think the problem here is the way this gets presented when there were a lot of different roads and it cuts us off. And that's what I don't want to have happen.
Okay. I want to solve this problem if it's possible. One of the things, because you have filed motions where you didn't ask for a hearing. There's still one, a couple hanging out there, okay? And so I don't know what, if I'm waiting, okay, if you're asking for a hearing or not, or if you're, because historically you guys have worked really well together, okay? Stipulations, but then I don't get a stipulation. I don't get a request for a hearing. So what am I supposed to do then? So what I'm starting to wonder about is maybe we should just have a hearing, okay, at least once a week. I mean, a month. Maybe once a week.
I'm here every week.
Maybe
we can do it.
Okay.
We can do it.
Like a Thursday afternoon, okay?
That's the day I'm here.
And then, and then we can kind of clean out a lot of these things that are sealed or, arguments about this or that. I don't particularly want to do that, but you and the court, okay, both of you, both sides, that you've worked really hard, okay, to protect the goal of a fair trial. And all of a sudden, I feel like it's cracking a little bit, the work together, okay? Because if we have to have hearings on every single thing, we got a long ways to go. And it's a lot of time, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of money, and it just makes everything more difficult. So if you can come together on certain things, then it's a stipulation that we need, then it's a stipulation. If it's a hearing, it needs a hearing. I'm fine with accommodating whatever needs to happen in short notice, too. Because, like I said before, I just want to keep moving on this. Just so it's taking a long time.
Your Honor, I think the record shows that we have been able to stipulate probably to the majority of things. I don't keep count. There are some issues that we have not been able to reach an agreement on. And bringing it back to the issues that are before the court right now, I realize we have a bigger picture to talk about. But the defense makes a big deal about the state hearing that there was these surveys. There were surveys going on in our community back in around the 8th or so of March. And as the declaration that's been filed with the court shows, yes, we did. And we immediately referred that to law enforcement to investigate, find out what these surveys are about, find out who these people are that are doing the survey if you can, get that information to us. And that process is in the works. And just days before we were able to meet Ms. Taylor on the 21st of March, just days before we got the reports from the police department, and we also got that recording that, frankly, the recording is the icebreaker on this. It's the game changer because it's literally what was being said, what was being asked, what was being represented in the form of the question. Ms. Jennings called, reached out to Ms. Taylor, say, do you know anything about this survey? Ms. Taylor says, yes, I'll be in town on Thursday. How we talk about it. Okay, so we sat and waited. I can tell you, I suspected that this was something that the defense had commissioned from the first we heard of it. But I didn't feel that we had enough information about the nature of the survey to determine whether it was problematic. And we've said this already, and it keeps getting missed in the arguments here. We don't care about surveys. We care about these particular questions asked in this particular survey. The defense is welcome to contract with people from California or wherever. I don't care to go and ask people, can you be fair? What have you heard about this? All those questions that Ms. Taylor was just talking about at, you know, page 2 of the transcript, those are appropriate questions for a survey. Page 4 are not appropriate questions for a survey. Just because they're put in the form of the question doesn't change the fact that they are an affirmative representation of a fact that if the hearer, the listener, was not aware of it, now they have been tainted by it. They have been, in your honor's words, they have been injected with that information. That is a clear violation of the non-dissemination order. To think there's a distinction between putting something out in a press release and talking to a private citizen is a distinction without substance. Those are both public contacts. And I can guarantee that if I went down to the bar and had a few drinks and was talking with some people and say, hey, did you know this about the Koberger case? And the defense found out about it, they would go ballistic. And for good reason. That should never happen. But that's exactly what's happened here. Not by Ms. Taylor. I'm not faulting Ms. Taylor for the questions themselves. But by the people they hired to do this. And it had to stop. Your Honor was absolutely correct. Cut it off. And let's sort this thing out. And if we lose 2 weeks, well, we can make up 2 weeks. Your decision was perfectly appropriate for the defense to claim that there's some due process violation there is without any legal basis. The defense's objection is, we don't like it, Judge. Well, there's lots of things that happened in the court that I haven't liked, not in this court.
Well, probably a few.
Well, maybe with Your Honor in other cases outside. That happens. That's part of the game.
I'm not here to.
But just because somebody complains doesn't mean that it's legally wrong, and there is no due process violation here. And Mr. Kanai is prepared to argue due process minutiae if that's what we want. But I don't think we need to deal with that. We are dealing with the issue of these questions in the survey. They are completely inappropriate. We have a group of at least 400 people in Lake Tahoe County who have been exposed to this in violation of the non-dissemination order. I think Your Honor is probably right. The only way we can deal with, or the best way to deal with that, would be to exclude them from any prospective jury pool. But we sure as heck don't want to say to the defense's consultants, yes, go do this in other venues as well, where if we can't pick a jury here in Lake Tahoe County, we may have to go to. Go ahead and mess with them too. That's ridiculous. I do not question the right of the defense to commission surveys, responsible, proper surveys, as part of the debate over venue. But this survey cannot stand. If they're going to do that, they need to start from scratch if they want to compare it to Lake Tahoe County. There is no way to take the 400 responses that have been loaded with these factual representations in the form of questions. There's no way that that can fairly be compared to question to surveys without those questions anywhere else. It's apples and oranges. And yes, it may be an expense, and it may be a delay of time, and it may be an inconvenience, but it is not of the state's making. It is entirely the responsibility and the fault of the agents of the defense. Entirely. We don't care if there's a survey. Now, I'll keep saying that because we keep hearing from the defense that we don't do surveys in Lake Tahoe County. That's not the issue. We know a survey is going to happen here. Now, when it comes to this idea of what happened 2 weeks ago, when we met with Ms. Taylor, we said, Ms. Taylor, no, actually, I said, Ann. We gave her the information. We talked about it. She indicated she wasn't aware of the actual questions. We said, we are very concerned about this. This needs to stop. And the response, if I remember, was along the lines of, well, we think they're about done in Lake Tahoe County anyway. I said, well, we need to bring this to the court's attention. Here's my proposal. We will send a letter to Judge Judge with these attached, copy to you, and then we can have a discussion. And I was told, no. The defense did not want, Your Honor, to see this without also having whatever they wanted to offer in response to it as well. I said, well, that's not how it works. I mean, we'll file a motion. Normal law practice. I've been practicing for 43 years. I lose count now. You know, if you can't resolve something, you file a motion with the court. If there are things you want to base your motion on, you attach them to the motion, and we proceed from there. And so that's where we left it. Ms. Taylor did say, well, I could be available the following Friday.
Thursday or Friday.
To talk with Judge Judge. And to my mind, well, that's too little too late. As far as we know, these surveys are going on again right now. Wrapping up or starting somewhere else, whatever. It needed to be addressed quickly, not wait a week to have a conversation and then go into a conversation where you're left cold. We walk in the door and we aren't able to provide you the basis for our concerns. So you are completely helpless with information. That's not how it works. That's not how informed decisions are made. So we prepared a motion. We made the attachments. We filed it early mid-afternoon, not late in the day, as it's characterized here. Now, I appreciate that Your Honor didn't see it till later in the day.
Right.
But that wasn't the intent. The intent was to get it filed as quickly as we could. There was no scheme to do some, you know, 5 minutes to 5 o'clock filing and take some advantage of the defense. That's not the way we do business. That's not the way I do business. And frankly, it's a little offensive to have that suggestion made, but I'm going to move beyond that. I have to say, I am disappointed to learn today that Dr. Edelman and his associates were not made privy to the non-dissemination order. But we can't undo that. And once again, that's not of the state's making. My knowledge, everybody that has been asked to take actions of any type on behalf of the state has been made aware of those restrictions because they are our agents. And we know we are responsible under the court's order for the actions of our agents. Regardless, I'm disappointed. I also want to be clear that I'm not standing here today making a Bar Association ethical complaint against any member of the defense team. Yes, language in the non-dissemination order contains language that parrots the Idaho Rules of Professional Conduct, but the laundry list of things that the court lists, I think, are much more specific. And that's what we're concerned about. And if I'm wrong and those are in the comments, well, then maybe there's a violation of that rule, but that's not my interest. I have no interest in doing that. My interest is in taking care of this case, making sure that we can have a fair trial, making sure that Your Honor's non-dissemination order is honored, and at this point, trying to figure out a way to cure what has happened. The first thing to do is we have to say, Your Honor, court needs to say, no, you will not ask any more questions of prospective jurors without the court approving it. Because we've seen that the people retained by the defense cannot be trusted in that regard. Fools once, shame on us. Shame on you. Fools twice, shame on us. We don't want to get into that. They wish to proceed with surveys? They can't, but they need to start over.
Start over in Lake County.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no other way to get a fair comparison with any other prospective veneer without doing a new survey in Lake County and not including any of the people who were surveyed in this 400-person group. That's the only way we can avoid this taint. Again, this is not of the state's making. We are trying to salvage a mess. As Your Honor noted, there's no difference between talking, and I said just a little bit, talking one-on-one and issuing a press release or standing down in Friendship Square with a bullhorn. The dissemination is dissemination to a member of the public, and it's equally in violation of the no contact order or the non-dissemination order.
Do you think some of those 400 people might have talked to other people? Like their families, their friends.
I know they have, Judge. And the reason I know that is we got a call from the sheriff's office earlier today where a woman called and said that she had heard about this survey and the survey made her uncomfortable. And when they called her back, it actually was her son that had received the survey inquiries a couple weeks ago and happened to mention it to her. And she just wanted the sheriff's office to know about that. I mean, we have good, responsible people in this county. And they can sense what's right and what's wrong. You don't have to be a trained lawyer to know that it's not right to go out asking these kind of questions to people who might be prospective jurors in the case. It's just not right. So that's what we need to do today, Judge. I don't believe there's a due process issue. Matter of fact, I know there's no legal due process issue here. I appreciate Ms. Taylor isn't happy with the things ready to roll out. That's life sometimes. But there's no due process issue here. And we ask that Your Honor enter the order cutting off any more use of this survey, directing that that the defense, if they wish to continue with the survey, start over and submit questions to the court to make sure that we aren't getting ourselves back into a similar situation, baiting people who may have no knowledge of this case with detailed information, and detailed information, some of which is completely false. And not only completely false, but it's false in a sense that makes Mr. Koberger look bad. It is creating bias against Mr. Koberger based on false or inadmissible evidence. That's outrageous. How can we possibly preserve a jury pool when that's going on? We can't. It has to stop. Thanks, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Okay, Ms. Taylor.
So, not liking the result of a hearing or not liking an order from the court is one thing. That happens all the time. I think courts probably have people on both sides of the aisle that don't like whatever decision they make most of the time. And that's just the way it goes. What I complained about was not being able to have a voice before a decision was made. I think that's an important distinction. I'm not saying don't make a decision I don't like or I'll file a motion against you. I'm not saying that at all. I imagine over the course of this case, there will be decisions I like and decisions I don't. It's the way it's been in the past. This was solely about being shut out of the process before a decision was made. I understand the order said I could have my day. Here's my day. So that I want to make it clear it's that motion didn't come because I didn't like the result. I didn't like the process. That was it.
That was my issue with the process.
And I wanted to be heard about that. I do not think that these survey questions that related to what have you heard in the media injected information to people. I understand that this is a close community, and I understand that people will call officers with concerns and the prosecutor with concerns, and that's kind of the thing that I'm worried about is the close-knit nature of it. That's a good thing unless you are an outsider having a trial. And then it's not a good thing. And that is kind of a problem that we have with that.
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, people I see, that there's plenty of people here who really don't like law enforcement that much. So I think it's always a mistake to stereotype people or communities.
Fair enough, Judge. Usually I don't find that people that have issues with law enforcement make their way to my juries, but that's probably something we'll talk about a different day.
Sure.
As far as where we go from here, the moment of getting our work done and not having it out in public is over. So I suppose the court can weigh in on what we should do. I wouldn't be quick to say that we couldn't use the surveys that were done. If that's the route the court is going to go to have us do other surveys, I mean, that's what we'll do if the court asks us to do that. But I'd ask the court to remember that it's quite common for the general questions to draw a no. And then you ask other questions because then people are like, well, yeah, I did know that. And that's how you get to the heart of the real information. So I think there's got to be some give and take in there. I'll say two more things, and then I'll be done. Our office did send Dr. Edelman a copy of the non-dissemination order. I didn't know he didn't receive it, but he didn't receive it. He definitely knows about it now. I would have caught that, but we didn't send him anything. Our process is to make sure that we have the signed order back from anybody that we're going to communicate with about the case. This solely had to do with him looking at what are the media stories, what are the big topics, so I can determine how saturated the community is and bias it. So that's why I didn't catch it. I'll take responsibility for that. But just to maybe allay some of Mr. Thompson's disappointment, it was sent. I don't know what happened, but he didn't receive it. He surely was. My other thing is if the court wants to change the survey, I would like an opportunity to speak with Dr. Edelman about the possibility of preserving what we've done versus just starting all over before, I guess, any more surveys went out if they're going to be changed. If the court will let us keep going with the way we're going, then we could make the comparisons from county to county. But if that's not what the court's going to do, I would like to see if there's a way to preserve what's been done by not looking at the questions that the court wouldn't want us to ask of other jurors. And I don't know if that works, so I need to talk to Dr. L.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of interested in, trying to figure out and have to start all over, how to approach this. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is how much this costs taxpayers' money. And I have no idea. I'm not part of the money, part of this. But, you know, if there's a way to kind of salvage something, I'm not happy about these specific questions, especially ones that are false. Then people hear that, and they just get even worse sort of depression. Okay, this is COVID. There are also cases that are questions that are very specific that are going to be major issues in the trial. And so I'm really worried about that, particularly, again, I think this disability is kind of ironic that, you know, this with the time, the passage of time has kind of calmed down, you know, that in terms of the media, very heavy initially. I have to say that the media here today, but the streaming has probably helped a little bit. Sort of kind of slowed things down intentionally, but I think, you know, people kind of move on a little bit, and then all of a sudden they get a phone call from a stranger talking about particular issues in COVID case, and so it kind of fires it up. That's one of my worries. Also, just the fact that you can say 400 people, but 400 people in town spread really thin. So it does, it is dissemination to some degree. And I'm no expert about it. I don't know if, I think you probably should, Mr. Edelman is going to hear this whole hearing. So maybe a discussion with him, maybe even a discussion with each other. Everything's kind of out in the open.
Sure.
I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for that because I like to kind of know to some degree what's happened in this case. And let's just deal with it really quickly. I don't know. You know, maybe we can next week.
Judge, I can be in. I plan to be in town on the 11th. If the court wants a hearing, I can make myself available really any day next week. I already have plans for the 11th, but I can be available any other day the court wants.
So I'm going to be sitting with the Supreme Court in Nestor's County. So could you maybe have a hearing? Short hearing of some kind, maybe on April 10th.
Or Your Honor, is that a Wednesday?
Yeah, that's a Wednesday.
I will if that's the only time the court has. Wednesdays, I have different things, but I can cancel them if that's the only time. If the court wants me to come back Monday,
I'll
work I can.
With you.
I could 3 o'clock in the afternoon would be easiest for me on that day on the 10th.
I have a treatment court meeting. 2:30 to 3:30.
I can do 4 o'clock, or if the court wants to do it at 1, I can make that happen too.
Hey, Judge, I'm confused. What are we going to have a hearing on?
Well, I want to see what thoughts you all have about dealing with the situation now, making sure that we can salvage country or nothing. And Ms. Taylor is going to talk to Mr. Edelman, and maybe that'll give us some thoughts. Otherwise, I mean, I could just make the decision right now, but I'm no expert about surveys.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know how you feel about 4 o'clock on April 10. Could we just do that by Zoom, or do you want to be here?
Your Honor, Zoom would be fine with me. Mr. Koberger would likely not be present. If he's present by Zoom, I will be here with him. So.
Okay. I mean, well, we can do it in person.
Let's go ahead and do it in person. I'll change my visiting day to Wednesday instead of Thursday.
Okay. Is that okay, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, sir. We can be here 10th or above.
And, you know, Ms. Massif or Mr. Nye or Ms. Beatty can participate by Zoom.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Because I want to make the best decision I can. That's possible. Okay. Let's talk again about, you know, having a hearing at least every month. That it's just like cleaning up. And also, I guess you just did have a stipulation that you filed. But I have some, there's pending the state's motion to temporarily seal Exhibit 1 in the state's response to Defendant's 12th supplemental request for discovery. Is that?
That would be covered by the stipulation that we filed today.
Yeah. Okay. The goal with that, Your Honor, is we often want to file those attachments to discovery under seal. Those contain things that shouldn't be made public. We both agreed to it. And originally, we were getting stipulations. And then I think we'd done it so much, we just started doing orders. So the purpose of that is for us to just send along those and with an order for under seal, knowing that I'm always going to stipulate to attachments to discovery responses to be under seal and the same with them. I mean, we know what we're each asking. So.
Okay. And I worry about the clerks too. Okay. So if you could just have a stipulation that says with regard to discovery responses, you can go ahead and see. Okay. I mean, as long as it's justified.
And that's the intent of what we submitted today, Your Honor, is that attachments to discovery requests and discovery responses, not to the cover document itself, but the attachments that have the details would just automatically be sealed when we're stipulating to that. So that would be routine.
Okay, great. So you backed off a little bit there, Taylor, Ms. Taylor, in that particular, you want everything, a hearing, or, you know, everything needs to be stipulated.
That is a stipulation, Judge.
Well, it is. Okay.
We also, Judge, I believe we have some other things on the motion to augment the record.
Yes.
We've been gathering more information on that, and it's my fault that I dropped the ball last month and didn't get a second batch of information compiled to Ms. Taylor. She got that today. We are contemplating that we will be able to present the court with a stipulation on that issue as well, with certain emails and communications attached to it, and then also have an ongoing stipulation about off-the-record communications, email or letter communications involving the court.
Excellent.
So we're making progress. We're working together on as much as we can.
There was also a defendant's motion requesting additional deadlines that was filed on March 6th. We didn't ask for here.
Your Honor, I haven't asked for a hearing. I know the state filed an objection to that, and we don't have a hearing on that yet. My thought would be that after we submit everything on our motion for venue change, when the court's ready to make a decision on that, I think that's when we'd probably call for a hearing on our motion, and probably the state would want to be heard at the same time on their objection.
Okay. So that can just hang out there for a while.
I think so.
Okay. Then we got state's motion to unseal state's motion for order of prohibiting contact with the prospective jurors absent leave of.
Which is relates to what we've been talking about today, Judge.
Yes,
we had filed our original motion under seal. The initial response from the defense was under seal that said, we object. And then the defense's memorandum with the attached affidavit was not filed under seal. So our position was that in fairness to the public record, that our motion should be unsealed and just keep the attachment sealed to protect the identity of the people who were interviewed by law enforcement or contacted law enforcement about being subject to the survey.
Any objection to the statement?
In large part, no. There is a sentence in there where the state talks about evidence they plan to present, and that would seem like something they may want redacted before it became in the public record. Our response didn't have anything like that. I can show Mr. Thompson later, so in case he wants to prepare a redacted one for the court.
You know what she's talking
about? I don't, but we can talk about it, Judge, and Ms. Taylor just show us or send us what the language is. I'm sure we can work it out.
Okay. And so, and I guess this we are already covered by the stipulation. Defendant's motion to file exhibit M attached to defendant's 14th supplemental request for discovery.
That would be covered by today's stipulation.
Okay. Okay, I think I've had my speech. So
thank you, Your Honor.
We don't need to hear from Mr. Nye or Mr. Edelman at this point.
I don't believe so. I think that it may be more prudent for Ms. Taylor and Mr. Edelman to talk between themselves first. And I believe the due process issue that Mr. Nye was prepared to discuss has been resolved.
Okay. I have no doubt that I did not violate due process rights.
Yes, sir.
Of Mr. Coburn.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Taylor?
Not today, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Great. We are adjourned. Thank you all. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Roger.
That's the latest on this case. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our continuing coverage. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.